Are you struggling to effectively train both your customers and channel partners on your product? Well, NetExam is the all-in-one solution you need. As a leading customer and partner education platform, NetExam is purpose-built to help companies like yours deliver engaging, personalized training experiences that drive product adoption, customer success, and partner enablement. NetExam has worked for many years with companies that have the most advanced partner channels in the world, like Oracle, Dell, and Johnson & Johnson, with advanced features like customizable learning tracks, interactive content, robust analytics, and modern AI tools. NetExam empowers you to create seamless education programs that scale with your business for both your customers and your valuable channel partners. Stop wasting time and resources on ineffective training methods. Partner with NetExam and unlock the power of comprehensive customer and partner education to grow your business. Visit netexam.com to learn more today. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of C-Lab, the Customer Education Laboratory, where we explore how to build customer education programs, experiment with new approaches, and exterminate the myths and the bad advice that gets in the way of doing good stuff and it stops our growth dead in its tracks. I am Dave Darrington, and today I allow my guests to introduce themselves. This is going to be a fun episode where we're expanding and reaching out and learning from peers across our industries. So, Lila, Owen, which one of you would go first? Introduce yourself, tell us your role and where you're at.
I vote Lila. You go first, Lila.
I'm Lila Shea Colburn. I am the Learning Platform Enablement Leader at Trimble Incorporated. I'm responsible for people leveraging the Docebo platform, among other extensions that we have across our organization.
Wonderful. Like you mentioned, Docebo is a partner and a sponsor of ours, and that's perfect. Owen, how about you?
Yeah, so I'm Owen Chamberlain. It's very good to meet you, Dave. I'm a Senior Education Alliance Manager at Trimble. So that's a very posh title that basically says I look after some university partnerships that we have where we put our technology into universities, and then from that, we work with them on various projects, etc. And then another part of my job is around the wider kind of education space. So I've done all sorts of different work, from strategy through to development. Kind of one of these people that has gone around the system a few times, I would say. And then another kind of final part, big volunteer part of my time, is I head up quite a lot of the operations and strategy for our foundation.
Wow, fantastic. Okay, so that's why, Owen, you and I had the opportunity to meet at Docebo's Inspire event. That was it a couple months ago now. And that's what I was interested in talking with both of you about. Your presentation was fascinating. And you were just going all over and talking about these really cool things. Like, we kind of share a similar kind of brain type. Let's start on that. You know, my interest right now is connecting with peers and folks that are in all these kinds of different roles. Like I said before, is there's this blood in the veins of businesses that I think we are called to be a part of, to bring the oxygen to teach people how to do stuff. That could be internal, that could be external, that could be in the middle, like a partner, that could be, so many different kinds of people. And I think we lose sight of that. So what I'm trying to do is connect with folks like you who are in a different capacity and different kinds of roles, titles I haven't heard before, like Alliance Manager, that's cool, and start to run with that. Let's start off with a couple of things here. One of the things that I wanted to break into was, okay, let's just start with a topic. We might jump around a little bit and I'll guide us through it. One thing that I think you were talking about at Inspire was about digital credentialing. More and more and more, that is so important. When we say credentialing, what does it mean? In customer ed, it's really been a pull through where, I like to talk about, if we're inside a company, it's easier to get to people, but we have to motivate them to learn. Outside a company, not only do we have to motivate them to learn, we've actually got to find them. And credentialing has always been one of those really cool things that's motivated. So tell me about what you all are doing at Trimble, and how programs got started, what you're trying to affect by that, how it's really impacting your business. That's lots of questions for you there.
Well, I'm going to shoot to Lila for the technical piece, because I think that I will get too conceptual too quickly. So Lila, like,
why don't you take it from a conceptual standpoint and then I'll talk about the deployment.
Yeah, I dig that. Okay. Go for it.
All right. So, you know, I have a bit of a theory here that our market, so Trimble operates around the world and we have lots of customers in lots of different areas. And there's lots of different education that we do from types. So in person, there's digital, there's hybrid. You know, you can name it and we've probably done it in some way.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of our education is around our products. So how do you use our product? How can it change your workflow? What does that mean? So that's really important information. But I've always had this kind of inkling of, but why should they learn from us? Why is that important? I mean, maybe they want to know more about how to do something more effectively or efficiently. And we kind of do push that in our training, but the real kind of sell, why is it important to them? And having done some thinking recently, you know, if I use the term project management, a lot of people will think of PMP immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
Or very much. If you say the term networking, then lots of people think of Cisco. And actually, if you're trying to hire into those roles, you often want somebody with a, who's a project manager with a PMP certification or,
right,
you know, networking with the Cisco one. And I think, well, why? Like, why do we immediately jump to those names? To me, it's because they're the gold standard, or at least perceived as the gold standard in their technology and in their processes, in the case of PMP.
Very much.
And I did some brainstorming and thinking and thought, well, what is it they do well? And my hypothesis is that they do an awful lot with education. So if they are the educators of the market, they are the ones that can tell the market how something's meant to work. And so it's kind of an interesting one for Trimble. And in the world Lila is in now with the technology, is can we use digital credentialing to be a badge or a gold standard to say, hey, this person is undertaking Trimble training. And not only have they undertaken it, we're making it very visible that they've done that. And in the process of it being visible, or the market starts to hear about it, it becomes something that people understand. And if you post your digital credentials all over LinkedIn, then suddenly, you know, it's a marketing exercise, it's an education exercise, it's changing how people do things because they recognize Trimble and want to do it that way. So yeah, that's kind of might be my thinking for a while.
That's a good frame up. Lila, you want to expand on that?
Yeah, so when we think about how Trimble deployed this, it was actually deployed by a singular business in our organization. They took it as far as they could. And then with how large Trimble is, they really needed someone to help them scale it. So what did that look like for us as an organization? How do we scale something like digital credentials where it's tying to verifiable, secure badges and certificates that are being shared online? And that's the piece that really caused a lot of pause for people because, well, if this is getting posted places, don't we need marketing? Don't we need someone to stand behind it? And especially when the value add is employers standing behind what is being presented. So what we ended up doing was it was brought to our team. I'm part of the learning solutions team, and we identified the opportunity to standardize it across all of our organization, our businesses. So not just one doing it, but how many can we get to be onboarded? And that required standardization. Trimble has a very diverse portfolio. So how do we get our framework of digital credentialing to work for all of these different businesses? So to standardize, we had to look at different competency levels. We had to decide what the leveling descriptions looked like, identify how are we assessing these learners that they're at this level that we're stating they're at. What do our badge and certificate designs look like? And keep in mind that a lot of how Trimble grew is by acquisition. So people are really tied to their brand and their brand identity. And how do we address that in the badge and certificate as we design it? And then obviously, how do we communicate this information to our learners? But at the core of what we were trying to do was grow the handprint in the industries that we serve. So brand equity in our digital learning experience. We have the potential to affect millions or affiliate millions of learners in different industries. We want to have curriculum standards for all of our courses on our platform. And then obviously for our customer success metrics with skills benchmarking, industry networks, and then obviously our brand loyalty. While we came at it from a little bit of a selfish front for Trimble specifically, the value add is really for our customers and our channel partners as well of how do they get the value out of these solutions.
Yeah, this is the meat of education programs that I think is absolutely amazing. Can you tell me a little bit more about the journey? Again, well, let's do this. I'd like to know a little bit more about Trimble before we come back to this. So what is your industry, your main industry or industries that you serve and what the platform does? I think you've got some notes on that, but I'm really interested in hearing. It sounds like just a massive amount of people that you work with in the market.
Yeah, absolutely huge, actually. So Trimble is transforming the way the world works. And the way we do that is through creating effective and efficient workflow solutions in the industries that we serve. And that means we work across construction, agriculture, transportation, geospatial generally as well. So a good example I give to people is if you have a dream to build a building, you can design and render the building in 3D in our software. You can then get that imported onto automated dozers that will grade your building site automatically. You can then have a HoloLens that you wear, and it will show you the building and how the bit that hasn't been built yet fits with the bit that has already been built. And that means mm-hmm. you can identify clashes or things that have changed during construction and remediate them. And then eventually you can then manage your building through our software as well. So it's kind of like a whole life cycle, and that's in construction.
Wow.
So if you're driving past a building site and you see a guy with a stick with a kind of box on top of it, like an antenna, that mm-hmm. is, and it's kind of a yellowy blue kind of coloring on the staff. In some way, it's probably a piece of Trimble kit that
you'll see that. Which our CEO is known for going up to people using our equipment and saying, "Hey, so look for Rob Painter."
Yeah, absolutely. He's done that more than once.
Wow. Okay. So then the reason I asked that is I wanted to go a little bit deeper and explore the kinds of, well, we're going to get into this more, but credentialing is I've got to use then this series of the software, but you're talking workflows. And when I hear I could submit a 3D design to the system and blah, 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 and now I can have an automated grading system go out and level. That sounds, to me, that sounds intimidating for the, I mean, I'm moving earth. What could go wrong? Does that set your credentialing program on a level of, and this I'm exploring, is this a level of at first a credential is I've gone through this course, or is this attributed to like a certification level where I can demonstrate effective skills and use them for compliance reasons? Like I'm using heavy machinery. I'm doing something. Could things go wrong? Is that part of that whole program?
Yeah. So when we decided to deploy these digital credentialing, we partnered with a organization called Accredible, which is a vendor that provides these solutions. And they helped us develop our accreditation framework. So to your point, Dave, there are four levels in our Trimble framework. We have participation, which would be maybe attending a conference. Maybe it's completing a very, very basic course on the platform, on the Trimble Learn platform. Then we go into knowledge, skill, and participation. And what separates the different levels is the types of assessment methods. So the higher up on the framework that you go, obviously the assessment method is more intense or more requires more knowledge. So in the example that you listed, it's really up to our businesses to identify how are you saying that this learner is at this level of competency. They design those models to make sure that it makes sense.
Okay, that makes sense. And are you using any kinds of development education framework or approaches to have, like what have you used to explore how to build the appropriate credentials based on the skill sets that you both have to make this a valuable platform for everybody? I'm assuming you're using it with partners and internal people too, right?
Yep. So really across the organization, we've got different levels of expertise around education specifically, but also we really partnered with Accredible to help us develop this framework since they support these solutions. How can they help us leverage it the best?
That's cool.
Dave, it's such an interesting question, isn't it? Because And Lila's right. There are different levels of understanding concept. You know, beyond that, there are so many different education methodologies and methods. Right. You know, I mean, I come from a teaching background like 15, 16 years ago. That was, you know, a high school music teacher. And I've stuck with education. So I'm finishing an educational doctorate shortly. And I say all that because, you know, from my perspective, I use the term pedagogy an awful lot, you know. And I've had people kind of like sort of mock me a little bit for it internally. And then I've had other people that have kind of gone, well, yeah, I understand what that means. And so I think the language we speak is really, really interesting because we just mean so many different things all the time. You know, I understand pedagogy in a different way than someone else does. Mm-hmm. You know, I say this because part of these exercises when you're trying to bring various groups of people together is to define the terminology and spend time understanding what do you mean by credential? What do I mean by credential? What do you mean by certification? What do I mean? Because something that I learned in this process was certification has or can have like legal ramifications depending on the context. For, you know, others it doesn't have that. And so what's the business risk and liability when we use certain terminology as well? Are we trying to drift into something? Is certification something that actually we look to in 2 or 3 years' time and not just now? You know, so for those listening to this that are thinking about embarking on the road of digital credentialing, it's not boiling the ocean now. It's, you know, keep it simple to begin with and start at that point.
I also will say, like, for those listening, it's complete chaos trying to stand. I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you.
But why? Why? Why is it complete chaos?
There was just so many values of opinions of like, I want it to be this way. I want it to be that way. And we started with assessment method. Our organization completely disagreed with that being the differentiator between our levels. And we had to spend an extra 2 weeks and finally circled back and was like, oh, wait, that's actually what we wanted to do. So I think it was just the way that people had approached it and the way that Trimble had to wrap their mind around what this offered the organization took a minute. And I think we were expecting it to go a little bit faster.
Yeah, but I think that's a universal thing. And it's good that it took a minute and you got to an outcome, because I'll try to keep this short because it's about you talking, not me. The most important thing in these terms we use, like credentialing, is a little bit different than certification. And I've always had an experience of like a leader comes up and goes, we need to differentiate ourselves in the market. We need to teach our audience and let's get a certification. I go, you mean credentialing? Because let me share my knowledge. And then I go into the dialogue of certification means you're going to have to do X, Y, Z. This is going to take a long time. You're looking at 12 to 18 months. Oh, no. We want that. We want to have something in 3 months. And I go, well, then let's talk about a badge. But let's talk about, because the impact is lower, but what we can do is ratchet up. And I think a lot of people jump to, let's just make the badge. Do you know what goes into that? You do, because you've been in that chaos. Have you experienced some of that too? Like that, how did you fight through the arguments or the pushback you might get with, like, what is this really going to take?
Yeah. And I think a lot of the businesses started to take it a little personal that when they were looking at their content, that it wasn't at that level. They were like, what do you mean? Like, I've developed this really robust program and you're telling me it's not at that level. Like, I don't agree with you. And those were where a lot of the difficult conversations happened, because I think people saw themselves at a specific level that we were not assessing them at. And it really came down to, it's not that your program doesn't have value. It's just, it's not where Trimble wants to go. And having those difficult conversations of, yes, we are going there, but you're not there yet. Let's get on this journey together. And I think that was a little hard for some of our businesses to wrap their minds around, because these are our most developed businesses in the training part of our organization. And to hear that we don't have many courses at that level was hard for a lot of them to understand. And I think that's where some of that chaos came in of like, wait, so then I want to have the framework meet my needs and where I'm at instead of where Trimble's trying to go.
I liken some of this to some of the big digital transformational DX, is known as, transformations we've seen. Think about like Adobe, for example. You know, they moved toward a SaaS model. So they were originally, they sold you a yearly license or a lifetime license. And then, you know, over time they decided, no, we're going to move toward a you know, one that you have to pay for monthly or yearly. And it's a subscription. I mean, they literally set a new Adobe up inside the old Adobe because it was such a cultural change for them to be able to kind of make this happen. They had to move the business from the inside out, change it inside out. And I think in education, we're in a really challenging environment. Think about this. You know, we're told that we have to have customer impact, but it's difficult to measure. Some people are told they have to make money, others aren't. But if you do make money, you've got to make more of it. And if you're not making money, you've got to prove your value in some other ways. People have been doing this for a long time. I have to think, like, some trained directors I meet are very grizzled, long in the tooth people, have done it for a long time. And they've had to bed in, you know, with a contested environment, with tight budgets to make things happen. So if you're in that environment, you don't want to innovate. You know, you don't want to change because innovation, that's risky. Hear me out. I'm not saying this for everybody. And I'm not saying this for everyone in Trimble. It really isn't. But, you know, particularly if you're making money from training and then someone comes along and says, your training actually doesn't match the criteria we've set up, that can be a really tough pill to swallow. And, you know, we get pushback that way. And again, there are like a bazillion different change management methodologies you can adopt. I mean, I love ProSign AdCar because it's just simple and I can remember it. So that's what I use. But that desire piece is really like important here. Like, why is it important to someone to change? And there are different ways to, I mean, we would say in England, skin a cat. There are different ways you can talk this through, but realistically, if a business is going in a direction, they need to kind of join it or jump it. But allowing people to take some responsibility. And I think maybe what Lila is talking to is what we termed, and Lila, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like business configurable, and there's like a business, like a core standard.
Yep.
So the difference would be, what is it that really matters? What is the red line? What is the hill we're going to die on that says, no, everyone has to do this one way? And then what is configurable by the business? So maybe every course has to have a certificate, and that certificate has to have a logo at the end of it. But the business configurable piece is, you know, maybe the logo could be two different colors, or maybe like there's different types of font on it. Or maybe it could be that a learning course that has an accreditation has to be 3 hours long, but the business configurable piece is, it doesn't matter if it's 5-minute micro learnings or half an hour kind of modules. So, and in doing that, you can begin to give ownership to parts of the business back. You can say, we're not changing everything at once. We are, you know, this is the sandbox now, but we want you to know your customers and do something with it. So you'll always push back. You'll always have it. I always just think, you know, how can we grease the wheels a little bit with some options for people?
Yeah. Okay. What I want to do is, I realize I missed over the fun that we always have with the International Day of. So I'm going to skip back to that. But then I want to pull on that thread where some of the topics that we really wanted to get into that attracted, you know, this is why I said, hey, I'd like to talk to you both on a podcast, because of all what we're talking here, you're getting into the weeds of the business that's happening around learning. And one of the things that really popped out and stood out with what you were just saying there is, you know, this is all hard, and we're invoking like a consistency, and we're invoking kind of a methodology, and we're pushing back. And I think a lot of the times in that innovation is where we want to go, that we have these harried, grizzled education services type mentality that you're like, oh, nope, you do this, and here's how you build a scope of work, and this is how you sell, and this is what we got to work towards, and here's our goal. But that's education for education's sake in some contexts. And what we're trying to do is break that crap up and say, like, going back to credentialing, now I have an attribution. I have this badge that goes with me wherever. It's visible. It's out there. And that's a different kind of nuance to learning, where it's, I did the thing, and now I don't have like a little sheet on the wall that you look and behind me, my degree or whatever. Now I have these transferable bits of content, and I can do innovative things around making that happen with experiences like labs, where we have a conference and we did this workshop and you get this special badge because you were there and you did the work and we made something. And that's just cutting up all of this old school type of thinking. That's where I'm interested in like going in and reaching out and figuring out how we're doing this innovation. So, okay, let me do this. I'm going to go back to have a little fun. This was my original warm-up one. I'll probably bring this up to the front, or we'll just leave it. And I will share my screen here if I can. 1, 2, 3. Where is it? Screen share. I jump between so many different applications. That is crazy. Okay. So today, drumroll please, we have, I'm not showing anything here. We've got a few options to pick from. We have Global Cat Day, which I like because I'm a cat dad. but it's also National Bosses Day, World Food Day, National Missouri Day. I can't believe I'm from Missouri originally, in St. Louis. Anything resonate with you? This is kind of fun. The National Boss Day in particular. I had no idea.
I like, what's the food one, do you say?
World Food Day.
World Food Day.
Hmm. Time or money to world food charities provide food to those in need. That's an admirable one.
Imagine having all, guess all, of your learning challenges solved. With Docebo's Learning Suite, an AI-powered LMS built for enterprise, you can tackle any challenge. You can easily create and manage content, deliver training, and measure the business impact of your programs. Docebo is built for customers, partners, and employees alike, with dozens of integrations to embed directly in the flow of work. Check out Docebo today at docebo.com.
Any thoughts from that today? Anything that stands out for our education folks? You want to give your boss some props? They're obviously supporting you quite a lot in your program build, which is amazing.
Yeah, and bosses are always under the cosh, aren't they? There's always another kind of demand being made of them. So,
right.
You know, I can appreciate a good manager. I had a very, very good manager at Trimble at one point. I've got a very good manager now, actually. And I found it was an apprenticeship.
So. Oh, wow.
So
that's amazing. Like, we may have lost Lila here for a moment. So we'll just keep going here and I'll continue. Okay. Let's get back to talking more about innovation and gamification and things like that, because I think that's a real meat building on to what you've done. I think you've done some pretty interesting things. What do you think you'd like to start with first? We can jump around with. You were talking about innovation. Would you like to start with that?
Well, I was going to say, I wrote a post-it note down as we were chatting. Yeah. I think so much of this is about repackaging for a new audience. So, you know, we have the Zillennials, I think they're called, coming into, you know, and I'm a millennial squarely. And how we learn and the learning that we undertake is just very different. You know, it's not a classroom. For us in school, for me, it was, yeah, there was the old school teacher that was, you were sat in the row and they were at the front, they're talking at you. But it was beginning really to come into this more, lots of feedback, lots of peer feedback all the time. It was really kind of broken down into 5 or 10 minute, what we call chunks, you know, and then you would do something in that chunk and you'd review it and you'd do the next piece. And so we've drifted now from the hour-long lecture to the five-minute chunk. And what's super interesting, actually reading some news articles recently, some professors were saying that, for example, in literature courses, students were struggling to read a whole book because they don't, in schools, they no longer sit there and read a book for an hour or go home and read a book. It doesn't happen in the same way. No. Now, this isn't me being like an old, for those of you listening, I have a very large beard that is going gray. And this isn't me and my gray beard saying, the younger generation don't know how to learn. You know, I think there are some things to be said for, like, yes, we do need to learn to read a book. What I'm really saying is that we can't fight culture. You know, culture is changing, how people learn is changing. So we talk about innovation. To me, innovation is really about cultural transformation. We're getting a new group of people coming in. So the classroom method of the instructor sat there for an hour talking might have worked for a previous generation. For millennials, we'll grin and bear it. For zillennials, they will not do it anymore. And it's all about kind of what skills can I gain, the 5 minute learning, why does it matter to me? So, you know, and I try and like position myself here. I'm a consummate like learner and educationalist. Like, I've been doing this doctorate for 10 years, right? It's nearly finished, right? I love education. I also hate it right now. But generally speaking, I like learning. Not everyone likes learning. I like learning for learning's sake. You know, I just want to understand how the world works. There are many people that do not share that position. It's like, I need to add value to myself. I need to be more competitive in the workplace. I've got a promotion that I want to go for. How do I prove it? What education can I do that proves I've got more value in myself? So for me, education is so different now, and that's when I think about innovation. So, you know, if we're gamifying something, it's not just adding a leaderboard and putting some competition in there. Gamification for me is about how do we engage somebody to actually deeply play in a space, and in the playing with something, they engage at a deeper level and the learning sticks better. That to me is like real gamification. It's not, yeah. It's not this kind of like, oh, you know, I got more points than somebody else, and so I win the gift card.
Right.
Like that seems such a nonsense to me. But 10 years ago, that might have been the way that we did it.
A lot of companies are introducing virtual worlds.
To be able, yeah, go on with that. I think, yeah, totally.
Places you can't go frequently, or like you can't go on a dozer and like fail like that. There's not as much real application, so people are building these solutions that allow you to test that out in a virtual environment instead of being live. Huge value add to both the learner and the company.
Well, that's where I really get excited, because let me tie back to some of my background. I taught video game design for nearly 10 years at a university level, and I fell into that. I'm not going to go into the whole story, but you know what really excited me is that, well, the way I taught the class was gamified itself. So I listened to, Jane McGonigal's Reality of Broken. I read that whole thing several times through. It became part of my curriculum. And it was such a pursuit of different kinds of innovations, including gamification, but in a non-BS way. Right. When I hear gamification, I immediately got the chalk on the fingers and the chalkboard kind of, what does that mean? But what you're saying here is that it's more of, it's not a leaderboard per se, but to me, credentials, right? Digital credentials are a form of gamification. Mm. And just real briefly, the experience that I thought was most amazing when I implemented digital credentials at Outreach, mm-hmm. and sales enablement, engagement platform. I launched it one day with my team. We were so excited about it. And the next day we get this post, a series of posts on LinkedIn. Hey, I just saw that Outreach released the badges, and I'm going to be the first one to get them all, Pokemon style, right? And the person, she was a leader in the sales space, and she did it. She was the first one to get it. And then now you start to see other people pat themselves in the back, and it literally pulled people in to a self-enablement, you know, self-engagement program. And it blew my mind. I couldn't believe that I didn't have to do that work then. The marketing was actually taking off on its own.
Yeah.
And that's disruptive.
Yeah. Jump in there, Dave, and say something here.
Yeah, please.
I have this mantra. I've got a few mantras in my life. One of them is adults are just children in disguise. And I learned this when I was a teacher, because I'd meet the kids and then I'd meet the parents and be like, that's an interesting kind of link there, isn't it? Or like, you know, Ted Lasso, one of the quotes from that is something around like, I love meeting moms because they're like the user guide to the why somebody's nuts. You know, it's that kind of like idea that, you know, children, adults are just trying to disguise. So I say that because I wonder whether the very fact of someone joining in a game and doing something in a game is something that all adults actually kind of want to revert to, which is this kind of allowable childlike state. So they can become a child, they can interact with that inner part of them that I think often longs to come out. And in our uncaring business world is not generally wanted. Gaming makes them into a game is something that connects with a real core part of somebody. And that's kind of like a very intriguing place to be, particularly, you know, you're a game designer, you know this, the dopamine hit that it gets built into games when you win something is huge. People crave it. So I wonder whether that's part of this.
Pretty sure of it. So, you know, some points we were talking about, I think in our notes, we were talking about cybersecurity, trying to figure out how to model some of that thing, some of the things that are happening. Now, I can't relate to your platform, so you can probably tell me more. But, you know, I've been working with people about cyber. I spent 3 years as an enterprise security project program manager, learned a lot about it. But, oh my God, like training people on that was awful because they didn't care. They left their computer unlocked. They left their password stuck on their desktop. And, well, that's just the easy stuff. But what about, okay, here's an example. I have to learn about hacking, ethical hacking. What about non-ethical hacking? What about phishing? What about all these things that I know as someone had worked in enterprise security? Oh my God, the scary things that happen every day.
Yeah.
But on my side, I have no idea what a standard phishing attack is. Or so you can flip the script on that. Can you do something different? What are your thoughts about that kind of innovation and leveraging gamification in some kind of practical way? Or you can even contextualize it in terms of your platform. What are you doing there? What do you think about it?
From a personal standpoint, I think the best way I learn is failing. So if you presented me that I've been hacked and I need to find my way out, that works for me. Because then I'll know and I've learned my lesson to never do it again. I mean, Owen can talk to this more about adult learning theory, but I think it's so different depending on the person. But I think the traditional mindset of here's your 6 compliance courses, go take them and they're due on this date. It's not cutting it anymore. People are over it. It's mundane. It's boring. Oh my God, it's the same course for the 16th year. Like, it's just not serving the organizations anymore. Like, yes, it checks the box that they're compliance. And this is coming from a girl who's HR background, but it's not engaging. So if you're asking me to take this on my learning experience platform or your LMS, it's not exciting. It doesn't make me want to go explore the other learning. So what you're mentioning, Dave, of how do we make it exciting? That's exactly the direction we need to be going. How do we do that? I hope someone helps me figure that out. But I would love to see that happen.
Oh, also, Lila, I noticed this year I just did my global training on ethics. And for the first time ever, I went through the course and it asked some preemptive questions. I got some of them right. And it said, oh, right, you can move past some of this learning. I clicked the wrong button on one of them because my baby girl distracted me. And it said, you only got 50%. You have to do the training. And I was like, oh. No, I know it. But it was like, I was like, fair play. Like, to me, that somehow makes me feel like an adult in this conversation because you're actually asking me what I already know. So that was kind of like a helpful thing. I also wonder whether with a bunch of this, it's around, well, you could go super engaging and say, hey, you've now learned what a phishing attack is. You now need to launch one in this virtual lab against this person. How would you do a phishing attack? How, you know, have a go. And in some respects, it puts you into the position of the one trying to attack the organization. So you get to play act something very different. And then in doing that, you begin to understand what somebody actually might be trying to do. And so it kind of allows you to see things from a different perspective. Because I think as educators, we struggle to move ourselves away from what we know already, or we struggle to move people away from where they feel secure. So a good example would be, I'm going to do some ethics and compliance training. I've done it for 5-6 years now. I've been at Trimble. Yeah, don't take bribes, don't give bribes, and some other stuff. It's kind of like what ends up in my brain, which actually isn't very helpful in my day job right now, because I don't tend to go off around the world with foreign officials, you know. Way it'd be more useful to me maybe if someone says, you're working with a new university, Owen, and they're going to take you out for a meal. So how could you try and get a better deal with them? And then that kind of is very uncomfortable, isn't it? Because it's like, ooh, do I need to try and like bribe them? Or like, what do I do? Mm. And like in the uncomfortable thing, I'm not being taught to be unethical. What I'm being taught is the anxiety that I feel here, I'm feeling it for a reason because something in the situation isn't quite right. Now that's very useful to my day job because I'm never going to be able to keep a list of all the ways I might get bribed or could accidentally bribe somebody in my head. It's just not going to happen. But learning to kind of like listen to some like spidey senses going off, that's really important. Actually, that's quite useful learning at that point. And so, you know, that's kind of my view on this. But it's more challenging because, yes, you realistically, legally have to have a checklist that people have gone through. So you can say they've read the policy. That's what the company often needs, even if
that's it.
It's kind of like, it's not always, it's the kind of the spirit of the law. It's kind of the letter of the law, that, isn't it, a little bit? So complex.
Well, if I can respond to that, here's... We're talking some about feelings here, which is really cool because, my friends, this job that we've fallen into is one I think that you talked about you love, right? I have to say, I love learning. I've got 2 degrees, certification on some other stuff. We do this because we love, we also love that edge of sharing what we know. And that's where it gets really hard. So when I was at teaching at university, one of the things that I did, and Lila, I'm channeling you right now when you said, like, I learned by failing. Okay. I experimented with this in a class and I said, okay, this is the first semester. This is when I launched. I built a whole website. I gamified everything. I made it so there's all these things that you would do. And peers, like the students would grade themselves. I ended up not doing much of anything except architecting the experiences, setting people together, crafting things. I learned so much more as a teacher than I ever would have imagined. And that flipped the script to engage and get people contributing in different ways forced all of us. Now I'm a student as a teacher. We're learning things in a much more deeply. That's where I get stuck with compliance training, because it's like, okay, check the list. All right. Can you just give me the list? I'll put it up on my screen. I'll go through this in 5 minutes. I don't need 4 hours of SCORM modules. Right. Now let's think about a lab. You get into, here's the most infuriating thing I've always experienced is I'll come into a company and I've been on this track to come into an early B2B SaaS company that doesn't have anything and got to put it together. And sometimes you're like, oh my God, how am I ever going to boil this ocean and figure stuff out? So you get a sandbox and you start playing and you start failing. And the story I wanted to say in classroom, when I said, I want you to fail and learn through failing. And students are like, don't ever say that. That is horrifying. No, I want that pain, because how I learn is, let's take, for example, Gainsight. I worked there for a long time. If I hadn't gotten my hands dirty and tried and failed and had an environment, I never would have figured this out. I could never teach anybody anything. Think about learning hacking. There's a game. I don't know if you're into video games or anything, but there's one game I got a long time ago called HackNet. And it was so much of a learning experience because it quite literally told you how to execute attacks. And you didn't really know if you were in a real system or not. And that's how good it was. So, but who's crafting those experiences in the corporate world? Why aren't we taking that more of? I mean, I'm more interested in seeing where else you're going in your programming, how that's working inside, outside, and changing the dynamic of learning to be, dare I say it, fun, or at least engaging, or at least non-trivial.
I also think it's about application to yourself. I mean, I was part of an organization that was hacked. I didn't care about compliance training before then. And then I was part of an organization where I couldn't access a computer for 2 months because the hacker took everything down. Like, I walked into work one day, my computer was black, and I was like, oh, that's weird. I'm going to go make my breakfast. God. Came back and it was like, oh no, like the whole company has been hacked. And like that, when you put your mindset to like, oh wait, this has implications on me and my day to day and what my company can do, that really puts it into perspective of, no, I should care. So to your point, Dave, of like, yeah, read the things, great, whatever, until you understand the implications and how it works and what the effect is on you is when you really get the buy-in. And then when the companies see the ROI of that, of like, oh, my employees care that they're not clicking a phishing email. Great, we're not at risk for XYZ. It's a very different approach than read this, sounds good, done, next thing.
Yeah.
I also want to jump in here and say that, you know, as a Brit in America, there's been quite a lot of cultural touch points, like things that have kind of challenged me. It's a, I don't know how to describe it really. I came here thinking because we spoke the same language, it was quite similar. And I've realized all of America is very different. Okay. So every state is different. It's been remarkable for me. It's been a humbling experience.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah, totally. And because you don't see that in movies, do you? Movies are either set in California or Texas. So like it's totally radically different. But I say this because I think there's a peculiar thing. There's a blessing and a curse that American culture carries, which is like American exceptionalism, right? Being number one, being right, being correct, like being like at the front, you know, being the first, okay? And I love that about American culture so much, the positive, upbeat, generally positive, upbeat sense of like, we're going in a direction, it's going to succeed, it's going to be fine, okay? And I kind of get the sense this is taught from, you know, K through to 12 and beyond. So you have a populace that, broad stroke here, does not fail easily because it's taught that success is what we're after. And so when we think about what comments you've just made about failure and learning to fail, that is a really incredibly useful skill to have that I don't think is taught here very well.
No.
Now, I think about Britain, I think, well, we all just culturally feel like failures constantly. So it's kind of like, and so we look at America and think, oh, they're just bashful, like always think they're correct. And I actually talked to my CEO briefly about this and said to him, you know, if you want the inspirational leader, you want an American to do it. If you want somebody to do transformation work and not get very emotional about it, you probably want a Brit or a Kiwi to do it, because we're just not the kind of people that people generally want to follow at times. But because of, I think, our accent and our understatedness around things, people kind of, we can say stuff to people and they just sort of accept it, you know, and then carry on anyway. So it, you know, it's the failure piece I think is really interesting. And like Lila's just said, sometimes I think the rawness of something happening to you is what's needed to be able to shake that off and go, well, okay, we have failed here and we're going to come out the other side, and we have come out the other side, and we're going to now be successful. You know, it's kind of a different way of approaching it, but it may well be needed.
Okay, let's pull that thread. I know we're going a little bit long here. Are you both okay with that? Okay. Yeah. Let's talk novel training. Let's talk innovation. Let's talk what I really like about immediately about meeting you and working with you is that you have this vibe. And I've been really niched down into focusing purely on customers, right? Before in a previous life, I'd done enablement. Before in a previous life, I taught in university. You know, I've been indoctrinated as well to teach in a certain way, trained in a certain way. And it's not working anymore at all. Like you can't take this canonical traditional pedagogical approach always. And now we have to do something different. So now here you are in a company, in a big organization, you got to go, okay, if we were to do some of the things that you're already doing, why is this so hard to come by? If we all agree that we have to do more deep, like failure type experiences, I want a darn VM that spins up and it's got everything in it and I can break things. That's me. I mean, I'm Gen X, but I'm comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with failure. In fact, I lead with it. I fail fast. I've been a startup person forever. And when I do that, I learn 10 times faster than I would if you just give me a book, I'm going to fall asleep. Right? So tell me more about, like, you've got a lot of notes in our guide script. That investment, like how are you pushing the boundaries, at least within Trimble or in your approaches together? Because you're doing some really cool stuff.
If you want to grow your business, you need to educate and engage your customers at every point of the funnel. So Thinkific Plus can help you do just that with their powerful learning platform that's so easy to use. Thinkific Plus believes that customer education can combat the common challenges of recurring revenue, like churn. So, Thinkific Plus has created a purpose-built platform for agile teams that allows you to create impactful educational experiences for your customers. That means you can find new ways to engage with them, you can drive adoption, renewals, expansion, and growth, everything that a business cares about. So, reimagine education for your customers' success with Thinkific Plus. You can get 1 month of Thinkific Plus for free with our special code. Go to thinkific.com/CELABS. That's thinkific.com/CLABS.
Too much? Stunned you in a quiet
second. That's a loaded question.
Yeah, a lot.
I think let's take it from the approach initially of where Trimble needs to go. First, we need to have more of a learning culture. We have a culture of learning, but it's not a learning culture, if that makes sense.
What do you mean by that, though, really? I've heard this before. Some of you said this about the same thing.
Yeah, so learning isn't ingrained into our day-to-day. It's not like, oh, here, take 20 minutes a day and go watch a YouTube video on whatever you want. It's a, oh, you need to learn this skill, so you should go to training. Or, oh, you need to take this because I said so, or whatever. Not I, but like whoever is saying you need this skill. Whereas you look at some other companies and it's literally every Friday they spend 2 hours that they get to just go learn. My husband's company does this, that he literally Friday That's 2 nice. To 5 is dedicated for him to go learn whatever he wants to learn. Sometimes it, like, based off of his time management, does he have time to do it? Does he not? But the organization is right. Set aside. That is all that is asked of their employees. And we're not there. We're still focusing on compliance-based e-learnings that are very boring. We're still focused on sit in an ILT for an instructor-led training for 12 hours, and then you've got this certificate. And we haven't flipped the script yet to say, how can we change this experience for our learners? And that's where we need to get for both our employees and our customers and partners. It's not just one audience that we're focused on. And I think that takes leadership to be able to get there. And while a lot of our leaders are great and amazing, their investment at the organization is in other places right now, and learning isn't at the forefront. And that's what Owen and I are hoping to change, is how do we make learning a part of the customer journey, the employee journey upon day one? And that's really where we're trying to go. And we're making small strides here and there. But yeah.
I was thinking, Lila, like LearnFest might be a good example to talk
about.
Ooh, tell me more.
You got it. This is your idea. I'm not going to take credit for it.
So I joined Trimble 6 years ago. I joined the kind of more learning side probably four and a half. Okay, so it's about 18 months in. And I think, so at the time, it was kind of like edging into COVID territory. We wanted to increase the use of our platform. We knew the tsunami was coming, but we also knew people maybe didn't start learning. And because, like, as I said, like, I do love education in its broadest sense, I just came up with this idea where it was around, could we have a learning festival? You know, we're not going to get the Friday afternoons, but could we have a week, a global week, where we just get anybody who wants to talk about something to come and talk about it? So very kind of egalitarian. Yeah. Very low effort on the kind of submission scanning part of this. And we ran this LearnFest, and we had, like, I don't know, it was like 30 or 40 kind of people who came up with, like, presentations. And it was everything from, like, what I learned coaching my son's soccer team, through to this piece of customer education and how we created it, through to some change management training someone gave, you know. And it was like, it was sort of across the organization, very broad. And we kind of reviewed it and went, oh, well, LearnFest, that kind of worked, didn't it? And it was, you know, we sent some swag to people and that kind of thing. And it was fun, right? So the next year, it's like 100 people signed up to talk it through. And it was like, oh, okay, this has got some steam now. And so every year, it's kind of gone up from there. And because I've left that team now, and Lila can see more to the nuance of it now. But, you know, there's been a few more structures put in place to kind of help people who have never facilitated before to facilitate. So a little bit of, like, speaker training and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's always been this kind of just in it together. So that publicly was kind of my thing. Privately, I also wanted to increase the people using the platform. So we used the Docebo platform to deliver this learning festival. And then we got people who had done that. We reached out to them and said, hey, have you got more training you'd like to put onto the platform of your business area? We can onboard you to our business area, because I was in an onboarding role. And, you know, that kind of thing. So we grew up our users that way. And I think, like, by the end of COVID and a couple of LearnFest, we'd gone from like 50 power users to 180 to 200. And we'd just seen this insane, like, growth. And I think it was partly because it was like, we're not really judging you as a speaker. We just really want to have you along for the journey. We're interested in you as people. It's that feelings part again, isn't it? So that was a lot of fun. So I think, I still think that's kind of innovative for our company. And, you know, I will counter a little of what Lila said by saying the markets that we serve are generally kind of behind the curve when it comes to training methodology, you know. So construction and agriculture, you know, they have a rep for a reason. And I think that's why it's challenging for us as a company to overcome the traditional forms of teaching, because that's what the market expects from us. And so we're gonna have to bring our market on a journey of change as we try and change internally as well. What is fantastic, I think, is a lot of what we do now is around customer success and customer value. So why are we doing this? How does it make our customers stickier? How does it bring value to them in some way? And are those questions at the forefront of training will inherently change some of what we do, I think, anyway.
Fabulous. That's a lot. And it sounds to me, so a question is that festival, was that internal, external, or both? Was it a hybrid between both?
It started internal. And then I think we got some external speakers in as well.
External last time. And then now we've shifted it as we're on our journey of a learning culture, it's now learning weeks that are going to be facilitated every so often across the year.
Wow.
So
does that take any, does that use the Docebo's community platforms as well to have some kind of a cohort piece to it?
Not yet. That's definitely what we're looking into. We use specifically just the VILT functionality in our Google Meet integration that Docebo offers.
Oh, cool. Connect. Yeah. I'm always curious about that because I work with a lot of platform vendors, and part of all this is this dance we have between the tools, the technologies, the people, and the companies. And I really like where you're going with this. This is exactly what I wanted to hear for our audience, that we in customer education are kind of here, right? We've done things, but we have a different flavor of things. What I'm looking for is for all of us to do, it seems like what you're doing as an organization, you seem like a center of excellence to me, right? You're more fluidly working with each other in different teams internally and externally who are in service of partners, customers, and employees. And I like to think about it like this as a flywheel, where if you start the clock, every time the product starts to get updated, when you have announcement, you know, who's piling on? Well, it's, hey, we have everybody pile on. We do a learning extravaganza and we see what's the art of the possible and we do enablement and we do all other internal stuff. And by the time we've worked through that, now you're going to customers and partners and then customers. And then we've vetted content and looped it all. And now we have all these different people engaged. But what I think is we should start to drop the barriers more and say, well, why can't we have an onboarding that also has some of our team? I used to do this at Gainsight. I had our team members do onboarding with our customers. And it was really eye-opening because the team members, we have a CSM and a project manager and maybe an engineer. And they'd get onboard at the same time the customer all together in a room back before COVID and then online after.
Really?
But the dynamic that came out of that was bizarre. It was not bizarre good. It was, you're going to be my customer. What are you thinking about? What do you think about this? And, oh, I didn't know that. And you have this transparency of learning that everybody's a part of. It's a different vibe, I think, than when I grew up and, you get this big old manual and drop it on the table and you'd have to kind of work your way through it.
Yep.
Innovation
Totally. I think it's really interesting that Uber, for example, they still demand that their engineers, software engineers, like once a month go and do like deliveries for 2 hours. And if you Google it, they hate it. Like there's been so many people saying they're going to quit. They don't want to do it. They don't like it. And I'm like, well, is it because it's below you to be a delivery driver on the platform that is based on people doing delivery driving? Like that's like a humility issue for me. And it's also you're still being paid $250,000 a year as a software engineer to do, you need to learn how your platform works. So there is so much of that, isn't there? And I was thinking alongside it, two thoughts. First of all, by creating a learning week, we give permission to do something that is not producing business outcomes necessarily.
That's right.
So we live in this world where everything's about efficiency and value and productivity, and you have to give permission to things. So some of my research has been around COVID-19 and remote working. And one of the interesting things I learned in that piece of research was socializing in the office is what people miss more than going to the office to work. And one of the questions I've kind of come away with is, well, how do we give permission for people to socialize in the office? Because if they're turning up to socialize, that apparently is as important as undertaking business, direct business productivity like work. And so I think about learning. I think, well, Garrett's company is very clever in this because they've said, like, on a Friday afternoon, you have permission to learn. So we are saying that 2 hours across our company is worth X amount of money, and we think learning is valuable and it's that much value. I mean, that's really, really quite amazing. Yeah. As we're learning LearnFest, we kind of did the same thing. We said, well, let's make it valuable. Let's give permission for people to down tools and learn, and through that process begin to maybe see a culture shift take place.
So I had the executive sponsorship for it. That went all the way up to CEO, VP, of ventures. It was all the way up. It was not just Learning Solutions Director says, we can do this. It went all the way up. And I think that's why we saw that 200% increase year over year because of what the investment was in leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see This is probably more hard to answer, but what kind of an impact did you see on the business side that that maybe is non-tangible, but felt?
Oh, that's a great question, Dave. A felt thing, yeah.
Well, you know, it's my favorite.
It's so true. Yeah. It's so true because, like, we demand quants from everything. So, like, what is the qual side of this? What is the felt side? Lila, you're going to say something.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is people are asking for it. It didn't occur this year. We switched to a weekly format. Mm-hmm. And people are like, wait, why'd we do that? I loved what you did. So that tells me, obviously this is drawing conclusions, that there was a value add in the format that we had built because they were hearing from their colleagues, and we've switched the approach a little bit, which is probably why they feel that way. But outstandingly in the feedback we received from the event was, I can't wait till the next one. Can we please do this more often?
Yes.
I loved this. I met people I would never meet, like, you name it. I mean, Trimble's a huge organization. We have almost 13,000 employees. So to hear, to Owen's point, Joe Schmo, based in New Zealand, talk about what he learned from coaching his soccer practice for his son, like, that wouldn't really facilitate outside of that. And for us to create an event that allowed that to happen was really valuable for our employees. And just like Owen mentioned, allowed the socialization that maybe wasn't as informal as what is provided in the office, but allowed them to learn from different people that they don't get the opportunity to meet very frequently.
Yeah.
The full circle is permission to fail, isn't it, as well?
Yep.
It's permission to say, well, you know, you're not being measured to do this. You can be a really, like, bad presenter. It doesn't really matter. It's more about you've got this opportunity to step outside of the norm and do something that is radically challenging to you as an individual. You know, or it could just be something that says, I've got a passion project about leadership coaching and I want to do more about that. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, I have heard the term coined, like, democratizing learning. Mm-hmm. I find that a very contested and challenging term because I think it democratizing anything can mean a lot of different things. And so I get a little bit like, I don't know how I feel about that. But yes, I think there's a sense of flattening the hierarchy about it and saying, you know, I spend all day every day in education in some way. Lila does the same thing. Yeah, we probably are the experts and know a lot about what we're talking about. But I want to not be the expert. Yeah. I want you to be the expert. I want to learn something from you. I want you to feel like you have the confidence as a speaker outside of the norm to talk to me. And instead of, like, trying to be right or the expert in the room, I want someone else to kind of feel they have the confidence to bring value in some way that they want to do that. And actually, that was something that I remembered. I was thinking, I said two things and I only said one of them. The other one was, I think we're seeing a radical shift in culture from businesses saying, we know what you need to know as a customer. And so here you go. And that, in theory, I think you would call that a patriarchal kind of perspective. Mm-hmm. And we're now moving toward much more of a, as a customer, what are you doing with our product? This is what we understand could be done with it. But what are you doing? Because we want to learn from you, often through things like voice of customer. And that would be what I would theoretically link to feminism, which means I see value in you just as much as I see value in myself. And it's a much more equal relationship. And I think so much of what Lila's been talking to there is equalizing relationships around the company through learning. So it's just really transformative good. In that way.
No, that's we're probably going to start wrapping up here, but to thread this, I absolutely adore what you're saying here because thanks for joining me on this because now we're connecting and we're saying the same thing that it's really a social learning fabric, right? That we've lost where I like to do a lot of workshops, even online and get people together and get people. And this was contentious at point because I was putting people in a cohort. There were all these different companies. And then leadership's like, what if they share information and they let them?
Yeah.
You know what? Because if you're this patriarchal top-down kind of, that's the thing that's really annoyed me in coming into this role of education that I'll go in and they go, well, we want you to do this, this, this. They hired me as a leader and they go do this, teach people this, this, this. And I'm like, why? How do you know all this stuff? They go, well, we know. We talk to the customers every day. And I go, well, you don't know. Let me do an experiment with you. And one of the, because I'm a trained scientist, I have to think like that. That's why we got the name C-Lab. What I did at one of the companies was do a talk to the customers. And what was interesting is that what came back from that completely validated what I was thinking and completely dispelled the myth that you know what to teach your customer. And I was sitting in front of the CEO and it was like, number one, this guy talks faster than me. And number two, what? Like, I hadn't even thought about the things that came out of this. And I wasn't going to be a jerk about it, but it's like, yeah, we have to take that democratic thing. Like, think about it in social context. Our jobs as educators is to do what we are doing. You're learning, you're trying, you're failing. You have to have we can't be in this rigorous construct of ancient pedagogy. We got to be bold because we're not going to survive. And the world has shifted. Gen Z, for example, sometimes what I've been doing in my reading and research is that they feel really like they're super smart, but they're not feeling supported in anything. Where is the learning that's happening? How do you get onboarding? Why is this my problem? And that's where we're losing people. We make learning their problem, whether they're an internal or external partner, and some people are better at it than others. But we've got to break that up by innovation and new technology and our brains and our fun. I don't know. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, Lila, can you talk to some of how you've had to work with internal customers?
Really, ooh, that's going to be a really good one.
How they've learned to use the platform, what challenges they've had. Because I know I feel like listening to you spend so much of your time, not just in the platform, but helping others to use the platform.
Yeah. I think onboarding is an ongoing thing. I think we think of it as day one through 90 or however long your onboarding is. And it's actually much, much more than that. And what I mean by that is some organizations don't have support professionals that can help them. Like some of the smaller organizations we work with, who you onboard with is who will answer your questions longer term. And I think that's an approach that needs to be taken more frequently. And the reason I say that is you build the relationship with someone as you onboard. You're in your most vulnerable state. I don't know what I'm doing. And you're asking me to do something and I'm trying to learn and I feel uncomfortable. And then 90 days later, you shift me to someone else and I have to build that relationship all over again. And I see that in our organization today as I onboard people into the platform and shift them somewhere else. And we actually see a drop in engagement on our platform because they have to rebuild that relationship with support. And they're still confused and don't know the answers to their question. And now they're just like, oh, whatever. I just am not even going to use this solution anymore. So as we think about how do we continue to engage our power users, admins, learners, it almost has to continuously be a relationship, just like in your personal life. If you want to continue to build your relationship with someone, you continue to invest in it. And I think that's what a lot of what we're trying to do is stay connected between my role as onboarding and platform enablement and then into support. And it's proving to be a little bit more difficult than I thought because what my best practices are different than what support's best practices are and what Docebo's best practices are and how do we mesh the three together and present a unified front. But there's a value in providing a unified front because then it's cohesive experience for all of them.
Definitely.
Well put.
I also want to there was a bit of a challenge I wanted to give to anyone listening to this podcast, which is really around getting people to put themselves in their learner's shoes.
Yes.
A little bit. And so I was just kind of mulling on top of my head, well, how do you do that easily? So I thought, okay, right, personal example, I want to learn to draw. I can kind of draw, but it's not very good, which is my own kind of judgment of my own drawing. Okay, but ostensibly I'm a musician, I'm not an artist, visual artist, but I want to learn to be a visual artist. So January time, I've found a watercolor course, a friend of mine teaches. I'm going to learn to be a watercolor kind of person, okay? I'm going to go and do that. And I was thinking that in that process, I am going to experience so many frustrations because I'm a perfectionist and I put myself under a lot of pressure to be extremely good at what I do and I won't be. And so I'm mulling, as I do this, I want to write down as I'm doing this course, why am I getting frustrated and where am I finding joy and why am I feeling those things? I want to write that down and fold that piece of paper and put it under my keyboard for a couple of months. And then I want to carry on drawing. And then I want to come back to that piece of paper in a couple of months' time and say, that's what I was feeling at the time. Do I still feel like that? Reflecting back what was going on for me at that time. And I give that example because I want to challenge anyone listening to this. If you want to do something innovative or want to do something different with learning or education, go and find a course in something you are not is not your discipline. It could be cybersecurity, it could be change management, it could be, I'd say, something practical. So like coding might be a good example in IT, or it could be drawing like I want to do, art or drama. Do something that will radically take you outside of your comfort zone, and do it for two reasons. Firstly, learn a new skill. It's always fun. Secondly, write down your frustrations and your joys and your thoughts and feelings as you do the sessions, and just fold that away. And then in a couple of months' time, come back to it and read it. And then think, my learners on my courses are going to be experiencing exactly the same feelings as they get to my course. So having now been through it myself and reflected on what it was, how can I make this experience different? What do I need to innovate on? And what can I keep the same? Or maybe help reduce some of the pain and increase that engagement? And that's kind of what, you know, Lila's talking about. She is both the onboarding person and also lives that platform. So knows the frustrations and also helps people with the frustrations. And I just think it's an interesting way of trying to like step outside of ourselves and do something different.
I think it's absolutely, you've dropped some golden gems here, and I appreciate you both for that, because this is the meat of learning. You know, we all come from a different path to get here. And I think what we're all trying to get to is express how deeply valuable the work we do is, but it's also a dance and a relationship, not just with customers, but our leadership. I was on a webinar earlier today, and that came up as, if you have your leadership support, you can do anything. And that has to prioritize a culture of learning. Otherwise, you're just selling stuff and hacking stuff. And it's not. We love learning for a reason, because it is powerful. And trying to find new ways and new solutions are where we're at now. So, all right, I'm going to start walking out the door here. But is there anything either or both of you want to say? I know, Lila, you have some sessions coming up at the next event, and I think there are a couple events here.
Yeah.
This might be in retrospect, but people can find all that online and watch it. So
yes.
Tell me what you're up to.
Yeah, so I'm heading to Docebo Inspire in Rome. I will be leading a same session Owen led at Docebo Inspire Dallas regarding digital credentialing. So please check it out. There will be recordings if you're catching this later, but excited to facilitate it.
And then thanks. Lila and I are both talking. We're then doing the joint presentation together. We're going to do it at our Trumbull user conference, which is called Dimensions in Las Vegas. It'll be around November time. So we'll be there. And in true to spirit, both of us will also be working on some voice of customer kind of sessions while we're there. And I think I'm talking on an AI panel, and there'll be customers and like dealers all over the place. So it'll be a lot of fun, very interesting. So if you've got some time in November, Dimensions 2024, Trimble Dimensions, check it out. It'll be a really interesting time.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you both. And if you want to connect to either Lila or Owen, we'll have links and everything, and reach out on LinkedIn. I guess that's one of the good places. Is there any other place that people can connect with you?
I'm LinkedIn boy.
LinkedIn works.
Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take this out the door. This has been a really, this fulfilled, it warmed my heart and gave our audience some really good stuff, because we're in it together. We're trying to solve things, solve big educational problems, and it's hard, folks. So let's, if you want to learn more, go to the podcast website that we have, which is just customer.education. You can find us on LinkedIn and everywhere else. We also have a new customer education community that we're growing slowly, but it is happening, where we really want to connect you to people that teach, learn, and want to do this craft. We're all out there making a difference. You can find me on LinkedIn and elsewhere. Special thanks again, as always, to our friend Alan Cota for our amazing music. I'm a musician. Owen, you musician. Are you, Layla, are you a musician as well?
No, I'll leave that to Owen and the pros.
And if this helps you out, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on any of the podcatchers out there. Give us a review. Tell us what you like. Reach out and ask what you want to learn about, because we're here and we want to learn too. And to our audience, thanks for joining us today. Again, go out there, educate, enable, experiment, and find your people. Thanks, everyone.